Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Dublin City councillors are to push for curbs on the construction of hotels in the capital amid concerns that the city is losing its cultural identity. Dublin is to welcome 20 new hotels over the next 2 years. That's on top of 20 hotels which have opened in the past 3 years. Industry figures insist the city is chronically undersupplied with hotel beds, but artists, our activists and elected representatives claim cultural spaces and properties to rent are being wiped out in the rush to accommodate visitors. Well, our reporter Barry Lenehan has more on this now, and he's in Smithfield. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Claire, and I'm talking to you from outside the Cobblestone Pub here in Smithfield Square. Tom Mulligan and his family have been running this well-known traditional music venue since 1988. It's seen as central to a recent folk revival here in Dublin and beyond. But I'm talking to you here as well because the future of the Cobblestone is central to what musicians and activists are billing as a battle for the soul of Dublin itself. The developer Marin Estates is proposing a 9-storey hotel along North King Street here in front of me, which includes the Cobblestone. Now, the pub would be retained as part of the proposed development, but would lose around 70% of its capacity, including the area where musicians and dancers primarily gathered. Now, over 2,000 gathered here at Smithfield last Saturday for a Save the Cobblestone protest, but supporters of the pub were joined by an influx of young people who argue what's happening here in front of me is a microcosm of a deeper problem for the city. They say cultural spaces, club venues and properties to live and rent in are being brushed aside to cater for tourists, and that a string of new hotels will destroy the essence of Dublin.
So that's the charge, but how does that stand up to scrutiny? The charge that there are too many hotels, and I suppose why are there so many in the pipeline, Barry?
Well, before coronavirus, Dublin had one of the highest occupancy rates of any European capital. A Foilshe Ireland report identified a deficit of 1,000 beds in the city at the start of 2020, with annual growth rate of hotel supply since 2007 a mere 1.4%. Foilshe Ireland also said Dublin was missing out on the lucrative international conference and event market due to a shortage of large hotels, and a major event by the Tourism Authority last month heard how business tourists spend 3 times more than your average tourist, around 1,600 each. The international journal Tourism Economics, it also predicts how visitation levels to Dublin will return to pre-pandemic levels by 2024, quicker than elsewhere, with corporate travel also predicted to bounce back better than other parts of Europe. So those are the reasons why hotels are propping up like mushrooms around the capital.
And what is planned then?
So the global real estate advisor CBRE at the beginning of 2020, it said there were 22,447 hotel beds in Dublin, around 12,500 of which were here in the city centre. And industry figures say that at the beginning of last year, 2020, over 80 new accommodation developments were under construction or going through the planning process, with 40 existing hotels also seeking extensions. And while a good proportion of these predictably fell away, the property advisor Savills says 20 new hotels are due to be built in the capital between now and the end of 2023, on top of 20 other new hotels just opened since 2018. Savills' head of hotels is Tom Barrett.
There was no hotels built in Dublin effectively from 2008 to 2018. And since then, there were about 4,000 bedrooms opened. And there's about 4,000 bedrooms under construction or about to start construction in the city that will open between here and 2024. And that's about 40 hotels in total over that period. Dublin had very few budget hotels, almost no budget hotels, just as we see in other European or UK cities. Apart hotels were underrepresented, and call it lifestyle boutique hotels. So the hotel market has changed over the last 15 years, and Dublin is doing a bit of catch up now. In the 18-20 months before COVID arrived, there was about 20 hotels had started construction. Since February 2020, there are about 6 hotels that have started construction in the city. So it is normalising us with other European cities.
Development of hotels is being criticised more recently because in some instances it might be coming in place of cultural venues.
Look, I think there's always debate, and the slowdown of hotel construction that I talked about is already happening. If you look at the cost of building a hotel and what they're selling for, so there was 2 new budget hotels sold in the city in the last few months, and they were just around the €200,000 per bedroom. It would be very difficult to build a hotel at that price.
Perhaps hotels, are they getting a bad rap in this debate, do you think?
I'm in the industry, so I suppose that they are, but I think there's, as I said, there's always room for debate. What's being built, you know, will probably satisfy a lot of that demand, and I think after that we're likely to be in a more normal situation. What you've got at the moment with maybe the 20 sites or so under construction, it's a total catch-up phase, and what we were seeing going forward was something more normal at a small handful per annum.
That's Tom Barrett from Savills. So Barry, what are some of the major hotel developments that are already in the pipeline?
So former nightclubs near Grafton Street and the Haypenny Bridge, now hotels. Over to my right towards Drumcondra, a hotel due to open soon at the old Big Tree pub, which we've covered before. A Dalata hotel also due beside Croke Park in 2023. If I turn around across the Liffey, controversial plans, as we know, for a hotel around Merchant Arch at Temple Bar, Britain's largest hotel business, Whitebread, behind the Premier Inn chain. It has 5 hotels on the way to Dublin. The first opens on South Great George's Street on November 1st. The Lewis line here beside me, take it towards the Three Arena, the 213-bed Samyon Hotel, developed by Johnny Ronan, due in February. Also due that month, a short hop from where I'm standing, a Hilton Hotel by the forecourts. And a little bit over on Capel Street behind me, Ringline Investments has secured permission for a 9-storey, 142-bedroom hotel. This is significant because Dublin City Council initially refused permission for this due to what they called the existing over-concentration of hotels in the area, but this decision was subsequently overturned by An Bord Pleanála.
Well, that's a significant list. Now, Barry, you mentioned last Saturday's protest there at the beginning. What else are those against the development of more hotels saying? And on that specific case, is there any update on the situation at the Cobblestone?
Dublin's Deputy Lord Mayor Joe Costello told me how councillors will hold a key meeting with Dublin City planners next week about proposals for the Cobblestone, and over 30,000 have now signed a petition against the development here. Some councillors are also pushing for stricter curbs in the future hotel developments in the city, while Antashka says it wants an Oireachtas-led review into some of the city's recent planning decisions and the role of An Bord Pleanála in those. As for campaigners, well, in a moment we'll hear from Andrea Horan of Tropical Popical and the No More Hotels initiative. But first, last Saturday's protest was organised by Shano Singer and People Before Profit activist Ono Hanavon. Demonstrators carried a coffin with the words RIP Culture from here at the Cobblestone to Dublin City Council offices, with much music along the way.
Cobblestone is very much more than just a pub. It's a cultural hub, really, for the Dublin music scene. The fact that we had, you know, I'd say about 2,000 people out on a protest shows really how much it means to people. I think the other aspect is there's just a lot of this has been happening around Dublin, and I think there was a big crowd in support of the Cobblestone, you know, from the Cobblestone community itself. And then I think there's other more people still who, you know, for whom it was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, really.
And the straw that broke the camel's back on what exactly?
I suppose it's just a model of development based on rolling the red carpet out to developers without any kind of heed to the people that actually live in the city. So that goes from, you know, the destruction of sites of cultural importance, very much tied in with the sale of public land, you know, and the building of housing that is completely beyond the reach of most people. You know, people just can't afford to live. They're being hit by kind of skyrocketing rents. I mean, I think all of these things are kind of tied in together. So I think people are kind of just sick of it at this point.
And in terms of the Cobblestone itself, you believe that proposals for the area are little more than cultural vandalism.
It's taken away a site that's, you know, a place that's massive cultural importance for people. We're very hopeful that we can beat the development, but as well as that, when you see people getting organised in that way and getting out in massive numbers, there's a real appetite, I think, for a fight for the city, really. The question is kind of who does the city belong to? Does it belong to vulture funds and speculators and big developers, or does it belong to people who are trying to live here and trying to survive here?
Andrea Horan, you started No More Hotels in 2019. Why exactly started?
I love hotels, but it was the monoculture of hotels that was coming in that was wiping out everything else in its way. That was problematic, especially from a club perspective. And I think it started in clubland. It started affecting the clubs, and people didn't really take notice because a lot of the time clubbing isn't seen as culture or a culture worth saving. Now you can notice it's definitely moving into a more mainstream piece of culture that affects more people, and the outrage is reaching an all-time high.
How annoying was it then to see these more recent developments, such as the Cobblestone Pub Hotel, still planned?
I can't actually put into words how frustrating it is to see that. You feel like the message is going forward, and as a collective, the city is like, we've had enough of hotels. We have enough hotels. So to see them continue to break through the city and to keep eradicating these really important pieces that people travel to Dublin to see, you just kind of want to shout out, please make it make sense. It just doesn't make sense that we would steamroll the most important parts of our city to make way for this monoculture of hotels.
One of the hotels contention themselves, or indeed Foilshire Ireland, and we need these beds.
I think that is very easy to say if you're lobbying for tourism. However, who is lobbying for culture? And who is lobbying for our city? And it feels like there's nobody casting an eye over the shape and fabric of our city and protecting that. I think it's going to become an election issue at this stage. Dubliners have had enough of their city being taken out from under them and sold off.
And that is Andrea Horan and Eoin O'Shanavon ending Barry's report there from Dublin City Centre this morning. And for more on the story, I'm joined now by Hazel Chu, who's Green Party Dublin City Councillor and also the former Lord Mayor of Dublin City. Paul Gallagher is with us too, Buswell's Hotel and former President of the Irish Hotels Federation. You're both very welcome. Thank you for joining us on this one. I was just struck by one fact that Barry brought us there, Hazel, that Foilshire Ireland said, didn't they, pre-2020, so pre-COVID, that we need an extra 1,000 beds to meet demand in Dublin City. So we need them. We build them. The people will come.
Well, I think a couple of things to note there, Claire, is that it was pre-COVID. I think anyone that during COVID would have seen that the city was completely dead, because we didn't have the tourists. We didn't have the office workers. So south side of the city's footfall was virtually nothing. Whereas in the north side, it was up 60%. There was trade there because there was residential. So it was mixed use. So to say that we need the city to become a certain way, I guess it goes back to Andrea's point of who needs the city to be a certain way. And the second thing is, in relation to that 1,000 beds, I want to know if that data takes into account that we are putting more tourists into Airbnbs, and therefore we are taking away mid to short term to longer term lets and putting families in hotels. So are the hotel spaces being used to what they're supposed to be used? It's a knock on effect. We need to have more short to longer term accommodation taken away back from Airbnbs and not tourists staying in Airbnbs. And we need to put the tourists back in hotel, and that might even things out.
Okay. And Paul, from your perspective, would it not be better to have a city, people are coming to see a city where people live, that it's not just a sort of fake tourist resort?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a city has to have balanced development. So, you know, the city's plan should take account of all of the needs for the city as it grows and evolves. I mean, hotels aren't dominating whole streets. I mean, they are part of the complex nature of a street and delivery of a culture area and a life. And lots of these hotels are creating very important jobs in the local community for local people. Hazel made the point that we're putting more people at Airbnb. I would say the converse of that. In fact, more hotels should release people from having to choose Airbnb for accommodation. Therefore, that releases bed space or residential space back to people who want to live in these sort of types of accommodations rather than in hotels.
That point, though, that Hazel made about the city centre, it is a pretty stark one, that the north side was busy because people lived there, but the south city centre was absolutely dead because it's populated by hotels and tourists.
Yes, but isn't that another factor of people can't live above shops in Ireland, that there's, you know, above ground floor, there seems to be very little life in buildings. So you see that right around this whole area, and this hotel is right in that area that Hazel's describing. It has not been and never has been a residential area for many hundreds of years. But I think that is the challenge for the city as it develops. We need to get people living in the city. There will be buildings that can be repurposed for that sort of stuff, and I think that should be looked at very closely. You know, hotels wouldn't be built if there wasn't an economic reason to build a hotel. And a hotel developer, they're not all vulture funds, but they will compete for those sites against other types of developments that might take place.
Okay, Hazel, can I bring
you... As we heard from Barry, hotels are not cheap to put on the ground. I mean, you wouldn't really build a hotel room for 200,000 euros. So these are very detailed business plans that support the development of hotels.
Yeah, business plan is one thing, though, but the vibrancy of a place is quite another. Hazel, I know you're asking Dublin City Council, aren't you, to limit the number of hotels. Do you have support for that motion?
We do. We have cross-party support on various motions, but within our own party, I was tasked with looking at the housing section and building sustainable communities. So major things we put in is to limit the amount of hotels, the apart hotels and student accommodation. And we also want to limit the amount of build to let within a certain zone. It is, as Paul says, about balance. But right now it is imbalance, and we've seen the effect of this imbalance during the pandemic, as I said, when the streets were empty. We also look at the cost of hotel building, according to Tom. There's always a case to be made, as you said. There's always economics here. But I guess my question is, if we are to attract tourists into the city, what do we want to be able to give them? Do we want to be able to give them chains of high street stores that are the same every other country in Europe and or further abroad? Or do we want to give them that unique Dubliness that we have? So, and we've always had, but we are starting to erode more and more of. We had this issue when it came to Bernard Shaw last year being closed down. We have this issue now with Cobblestone, with Merchant's Arch, where Paul said there's no residential there. Actually, maybe he didn't say specifically around Merchant's Arch, but in Merchant's Heart, the hotel application, it was objected by the Residents Association there. Residents do live around the city, and that's what we have to promote more. We do have to promote more above shop living. We have to incentivize, or I would like to think, tax certain areas that, or certain empty stores that aren't being used properly for above shop. But we also need to look at the land we have and look at, instead of building hotels, student accommodations and build to rent, can we start properly building residential for the massive housing list that we have that we need to support people on?
Mm-hmm. You don't think that that's something that should happen in a city centre, Paul?
No, I do. I do, to be quite honest. The financial crash stopped the building of residential housing and apartments, and that is something the hotel industry is not responsible for. What's happening right now is that the applications for planning for hotels took place many, many years ago, and it just happens that they're all coming on stream now. So it's a bit like waiting for a bus and then discover that none come, but then they all come together. So I think this will settle down. I think Tom already in the piece said there are only 1,000 rooms coming on stream next year. And then, in fact, there's only 240 rooms coming on stream in 2023. So whilst it may appear a lot of hotels are arriving together, they're not. It's not a wave, and it's not going to keep coming. It will stabilise.
Okay, so 1,000 is about enough, would you say?
Well, the market will decide what's enough, but not all of these rooms are new hotels. There are many existing hotels adding rooms to their hotel footprint as they stand already, with extra floors and so on. Yeah, I think the point is that hotels offer great opportunities for local people to get local jobs and to get good careers, and we want them that way. We also want people to be able to live in the city, because our employees have to live close to where they work. The last thing we want is people having to commute for long periods of time to get to work, because that simply doesn't work for anybody. But the economic benefit of a hotel is tremendous to the city. Hotels generally pay about 1,500 euros a room in local authority rates. That goes to the coffers of Dublin City. Hazel and her colleagues in the council decide how that is spent to support the city, the cultural aspects of the city, and how the city develops. Mm-hmm. Hotels are also, by the way, cultural venues in their own right. Hotels are meeting rooms, have functions that require musicians. Hotels offer space for people to have cultural meetings and community meetings. So it's not big box hotels.
Ah, yeah, but lots you can't compare a chain of hotels that, you know, the breakfast room cleared out for some sort of a meeting to the atmosphere you would experience in the Cobblestone.
I'm not specifically talking about the Cobblestone, and I think you have to be fair. I'd never reference it, but the hotel, whatever goes in that site, it would have to respect what is in the area. And I think
Hazel wants to come in there. One second, Paul. Go ahead.
I think we spend a good bit of time talking about economics in this our conversation. So let's talk about the economy. Let's talk about how we can stimulate it, which is what this hotel conversation so far is, that hotel brings in money. But other things bring in money, Claire. Like, I worked in the gig industry. I worked in Diageo. I worked in the tourism industry. So there's a corporate hotel client that Tom referred to earlier on, but there's also seasonal hotel guests that come in for different cultural events. If you look at the Dublin Electronic Arts Festival in 2011, that brought in a plethora of international guests that normally wouldn't have come in to the city to go to a music festival. It's the same when it comes to other gigs. That's what we need to look at, because
they need somewhere to stay too.
Well, they do, but there's a different type of accommodation we need to start looking at. I look at the likes of New York, Hong Kong, London. They don't just have, well, they have a lot of hotels, yes, but they have a lot of mid-range accommodation as well. They have a lot of shared accommodation. That's what we need to start looking at, because one of the things we looked at the Nighttime Economy Task Force, which was from Minister Catherine Martin's department, and I sat on it, I chaired the international subgroup of that task force. And when we spoke to people from other countries about how they work this model, they realize that there's a huge benefit to the nighttime economy. There's huge profits there to be made. Okay. But you need to have a proper working model of culture to put in place. And we won't have that if we keep on building hotels or student accommodation.
We're going to leave that one there for now. But thank you very much indeed, Hazel Chew, for coming in, and Paul Gallagher on the phone. We'll take a break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.